Succession number 20593, Reel 1.
Roland Nappin, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born on the 12th of the 5th, 1924.
Whereabouts?
I was born in Poole, Dorset.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Poole?
I grew up in Parkstone, and my schooling was at Heatherland School in Parkstone.
What had your father done for a living?
My father was a bread and cake confectionery salesman.
And how old were you when you left school?
I was 14 years old.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did. It was on a Sunday morning.
How did you feel about it?
To be honest, I did not know very much about that sort of thing, being only 14.
Did the war affect you at first in any way?
Not really, not to start with.
Did you get a job on leaving school?
I did. I ended up as a bread salesman, the same as my father. And at the end, I joined the British Army. I went to Dorchester for my medical.
What? When was this?
November 1942.
Had you been in any bombing of England by the German Air Force before that?
Yes. First of all, I went in to the Home Guard, and I did a tour down at Sandbanks in the hotel, watching out over the sea. That went on for some time. And then, as I said, I got called for to go into the army, and I went to Dorchester for the medical.
Which units of the Home Guard were you in?
Well, it was the Branksome, as far as I'm concerned.
What kind of things did you do in the Home Guard?
Well, you were issued with a rifle and that, and when you went down there, you stayed in the hotel and just kept lookouts over the sea to make sure there was not going to be any invasion force.
Did you think there would be an invasion?
To be honest and truthful, I wasn't certain. I did not know.
Did you get much military training in the Home Guard?
Not a terrific amount, no.
Was it enjoyable or not?
Yes, the people you were with were quite happy-go-lucky. They were ex-servicemen from the First World War, really. They knew about war. At the time, I did not.
What bombing was there in the Branksome area?
Well, a plane did come down and hit one of the houses and went, and that was down at Westminster Road in Branksome. Around here in Parkstone, they had landmines drop at a place called Cynthia Road. They also had landmines dropped at Leighton Road in Parkstone. The Pineland Laundry, which is in Branksome, what now nobody would remember other than the older person, was set on fire with incendiary bombs. And that was how that was. You could see the German bombers come overhead. And that is about what I can remember of it.
That plane that came down, was it an enemy plane?
Oh yes, it was a German bomber. Went straight into the house. I think he was trying to get out to sea, and he didn't quite make it. There was another aircraft now, bringing my memory back, that was at the top at Herbert Avenue. It was a garage and small shop. The man's name was Moore, the proprietor, and an aircraft went into that. I can tell you that. But knowing too much about it, I didn't know.
Were you ever frightened during the bombing?
It got a bit scary at times. My father built an underground shelter, which is right next door to where I live now. Mother and father had a shop, little general shop, and he put a shelter just outside, down in the ground. But we were able, how he built it, to go down from the bedroom through a trapdoor into the shelter. And other than that, we still used to have to carry on our work. And sometimes we were on fire watch, like at the firm I worked at. We used to go down there. There used to be two or three of us. There used to be a man called Alf Brown, another man, which was Jack Allen, and myself. I can remember those names because we used to go down there and look out for incendiary, if the aircraft came on. If any incendiary bombs dropped, we tried to put them out.
Did you think the Germans might win the war?
It never entered my head, to be honest. As far as I was concerned, I never even thought of them winning. As far as I knew, that we would always win with the determination of the British public.
Did you ever listen to Wireless?
Not really, to be honest. No, I didn't listen to too much of the Wireless.
You were just telling me about going to Dorchester for your medical.
Yes, I went to Dorchester. We went there and there was up the main street, there was a building. As you approach it from this end, it was on the left-hand side. And we went in, a quick medical. When I say quick, it was a medical. I didn't take a lot of notice of it. And they said, A1. And I came home, and I think it was a week or so, maybe a bit longer, a letter come for me to join or go to Colchester on the 5th of November 42, which was on a Thursday, and that's when I joined the army.
How did you feel about being called up to the army?
A bit nervous, but when I got to the station, I wasn't the only one, there was quite a few of us. And we went off, and we arrived at Colchester, where there were army personnel waiting for us. And I got took to Gujarat Barracks.
What was that like?
It was one of those things that you went into the barracks, and you didn't know what was going to happen. It was, you just obeyed anything that was told to you. Before I left to go to Colchester, I had a postcard come to say, when you get here, because they must have known that I was going to Gujarat Barracks, and it was from a sergeant who was also my school teacher. And I met him at Gujarat Barracks, and from that day to this, I've never seen him since. So I don't know what happened to him. And that was a Mr. or Sergeant Hayter. That was his name, and he was my school teacher at Heatherland School.
What happened to you next?
Well, that was on the Thursday we arrived. On the Friday, best of my knowledge, and it was always on a Friday, any inoculations, they were going to give them to you. So you got inoculated so that you had Saturday and Sunday, more or less, to get over any discomfort, shall we say, in your arms and everything. And then we went training for about 6 weeks, I think it was.
What was that like?
It was a bit hectic, but I didn't dislike it at the time. You know, I mean to say, I thoroughly enjoyed my time in the service, really, other than the war. I mean to say, nobody likes wars. But personnel, people, yes.
How did the NCOs treat you?
They were, to me, they were disciplined. You had to adapt yourself to what they said you did. And as long as you obeyed what they said, and it wasn't within reason, you got on perfectly all right with them. I had no bother with them. Never got into trouble or anything. So I rather liked the discipline we had. There was no bad language or anything like that said to us. We just obeyed the orders.
And after the basic training?
After the basic training, I went to, with others, we went to the 70th Hampshire Battalion, which was also stationed in Colchester at MacMahon Barracks. And there, from there onwards, it just developed into training again. And we went out to a place called Haverhill. And we was doing, and that was around Christmas time, because my unit that I was with, the company I was with, we were stationed in Lord Sainsbury's house, just outside of Haverhill. And I remember having Christmas there, because it's the only one time that officers serve your Christmas meal to the other ranks. But the weather was, there was snow on the ground. We ran down the drive, I remember, in PT kit, over a fence, through rivers and training, and it was ice cold. But we still did it. It was no good turning around and saying, I'm not going to do it.
And this was the 70th Hampshires?
The 70th Battalion Hampshires. And from there, we came back. We did a long march. I can't remember exactly, and it was a long march, back to Colchester. We were absolutely on our knees. And when I say on our knees, I mean on our knees. With kit and that, and it was like a false march. And just outside of Colchester, they halted us. We pulled in one side. And the next thing I knew, the regimental band was out. They formed us up again. And we marched through Colchester. And I think the regimental band was sent there for a purpose, because we were down on our knees nearly. And as soon as the band struck up, everybody braced themselves, pulled themselves upright, and we marched through the town back to the barracks.
Jack's memories?
Well, we had leave, you know. I'm going to say I had 7 days leave. And I was fortunate enough that my company commander came from Bournemouth. And twice I managed to get a 36-hour pass at Saturday midday till midnight Sunday to come home. Now, from travel from Colchester to Bournemouth, it doesn't give you a lot of time. Some of them couldn't get it because they didn't think they could make it, but my company commander, I think it was, lived in Bournemouth and he knew it could be done, and I did. I used to get home about 8 o'clock Saturday evening, meet my mother. She'd be walking down to the station and I'd walk back with her. And I'd leave again 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon and I'd be back in McMahon Barracks by 23:59. I was never late. But other than the leaves, we had embarkation leave. I didn't tell my parents that it was embarkation leave. I just took it and went. From there, from the McMahon Barracks, we went to Saltburn in Yorkshire. From there, I stayed into a hotel that was right on the railway station. You came out the back and you were on the railway station platform. And there we did more intensive training. We used to, what we used to call Windy Ridge, it was hills, then we had to have the up and down, double everywhere, and then come back. We did that for a short time. And then we got shipped abroad.
Can you tell me about the journey abroad, please?
We left Saltburn and we went to Glasgow, best of my memory. We arrived there and we went on a ship. At the time, I didn't know what ship it was, but since I discovered it was called the Multan, which we always said was a banana boat. But the troops were on there. We set sail. We didn't know where. Out the Clyde on a Sunday morning. For, well, we didn't know where we were going, actually. At least I didn't. But, and there our journey started for to go abroad.
Were you comfortable aboard ship?
Yeah, well, to start with, yes, until we got to the Bay of Biscay. And we were, my section was down on E deck. I had seasickness, and I don't wish that on anybody, for 4 days. And I thought to myself, this'll kill me. But anyway, we got over that after the 4 days. And we ended up going through the Suez Canal. And when we got the Suez there, there was boats where they'd been sunk, sticking out the water. You could see them. Then we went through the canal. Oh, before that, on this journey out in convoy, going from Glasgow to the Suez, I think there must have been a sub about because the Navy was escorting us and they had corvettes alongside And that is a sight I shall never forget. You just heard whoop, 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 whoop. And he said they peeled off and depth charges was dropped. So I take it that at that time was a sub about, but we didn't see it. But after we got through the Suez, we were on our own. There was no escort until we reached Bombay. We did not get attacked, not the other end of the canal to Bombay. I think we were fortunate. There was no escort for us.
What were your first impressions of Bombay?
Well, there were children around there, and they were getting off, and we were green, and they were saying, Bakshi Sab, Bakshi Sab. At the time, I didn't understand all this, because I was only a youngster, really, myself. And that was it, and I got off the ship, and we got transported to a place called Dulali, which was a transit camp. And we were there for some time.
What was it like at Dulali?
Well, just an ordinary military camp under canvas. Big bell tents and that. And you used to go and get your lunch or your dinner, breakfast and all that under a marquee. And being green, you come out with what we know as now sausages to people, but they were soy links called. And if you came out and held your plate in front of you, your sausages had gone, because there were big birds there that would swoop like small eagles, and they whip them up in their claws. And of course, the older soldier used to smile. They used to look for the rookie coming out, and his breakfast disappearing. It was just a laugh, really. But no, it was not difficult there. We went on training just the same. We went on guard duties. But we found that when we were in these places in India, the clothes you wore shorts during the day, but during the evening, you had long trousers because of the mosquitoes. That was an order. You were issued with Mepiquin tablets, and they saw that you took them because they lined you up and gave them to you. And they'd watch you take these Mepiquin tablets to keep your malaria away from you.
How did you get on with the Indian population?
No trouble at all. No trouble with the Indian. The Indian used to have what they used to call the charwala. He'd come round in company lines. You'd buy your wad, which was a cake, or whatever you wanted, and a pot of tea or a cup of tea off of them. That was, as we know it, only coppers to buy. But no, it was an experience, shall we say. But
were you long at Dulali?
I was there not too long, and then I was transshipped to the battalion, which was the 2nd Battalion Welsh Regiment. And we were at Nasik, another camp.
Is that where you joined the Welsh Regiment?
Yes, at Nasik. I think that was where the actual fact, when I joined there, to best of my knowledge, I joined them while they were at, I think it was Nellenberg Jungle, on a training, and it was raining, monsoons, and the kit got dropped out of the wagon, and I joined the battalion. We did some jungle training. I went to Pune, Nasik. And I can't quite remember the time when we went to move. Dates are a little bit past me now, exact month or date we moved. We did have a leave. I did have a leave there. I went to a place called Wellington Utikaman, if my memory is correct. That was the only leave I had at all abroad in India.
What did you do at Utikaman?
Well, it was a more or less a hill station that was looked after by Indian personnel, Sikh, and that. And there was games and that, and you could have a roam around. It was a leave to us. We went, I think I had that for 7 days. We come back to the battalion again. We did some more training. And then I can't remember the exact company I was with, they wanted volunteers for to go into the animal transport. And I volunteered. And that was how I became a muleteer.
Why did you volunteer for that?
It was something that I liked animals. And I thought it would be something different. And I volunteered for the animal transport. So I ended up as a muleteer.
How had you felt about transferring to Welsh Regiment?
I didn't give it a thought, to be honest. You know, a Dorset man in a Welsh Regiment. But I think that was for a reason. They split the men. If you had all men from Dorset in a Dorset unit, or the same as if you had all Welshmen in a Welsh unit, there'd be and there was a lot of action, and they got killed, you'd lose a lot of men from one area. This is only my view.
Can you tell me about your job with the mules, please?
When I joined the animal transport, the mules that were there, we had to put saddles on them, and that was a job of itself. You get the saddle on and tied the girth round. As soon as you went to put a load on them to carry, they used to up, buck, and hind legs up in the air and throw the load off. So the one I had did this, so we tied it up tight to a post, held onto him, put the blankets on him, throw a girth all over the lot so he couldn't throw it off, and then we took him round. He was bucking and chucking and trying to throw it off, and he come back afterwards, white with lather, but he didn't throw any more off. It was just to get them to carry a load. We brushed them down and wiped them down. They were looked after well and truly.